Welcome to Strictly Business, Variety's weekly podcast featuring conversations with industry leaders about the business of media and entertainment. I'm Cynthia Littleton, co-editor-in-chief of Variety. Today, my guest in New York is Joe Iannello, chairman and CEO of Argus Capital. Iannello was a top executive at CBS for more than 20 years. When he found himself out of a job in early 2020, after Viacom and CBS tied the knot again, Iannello gathered a number of colleagues who were in the same position. They set off on a mission to create a better SPAC deal for buying and operating media and entertainment assets. As he explains in our conversation, Argus aims to capitalize on the disruption all around the industry. The largest media companies are shifting priorities and funneling resources to build new streaming platforms. Iannello sees, quote, fantastic businesses, end quote, being neglected. He thinks he has an irresistible offer for those in the seats that he used to occupy. Sell or spin off a big piece of a solid business to the Argus team and let them run it with relentless focus. Given that Iannello is surrounded by CBS alumni in this venture, it's no surprise that he still uses us and our when referring to anything involving CBS. Iannello sees Argus as becoming a bolt-on management team or key advisors for young public companies. It's an intriguing vision of the near future for media, if he can pull it off. That's all coming up on today's episode of Strictly Business. Iannello, Chairman and CEO of Argus Capital Corp. Thank you so much for coming to Bryant Park and doing this in person. What a treat.
It's great to be here with you.
Joe, you have joined the wave of SPAC deals that have been out there in the marketplace. It's been a really interesting development. We're going to talk about the SPAC of it all in a little bit. But just to start, tell us about Argus Capital Corp. You recently raised about $265 million. And you have brought together a number of former colleagues that you worked with at CBS. You've got the band back together. Yeah. You've got some money in your coffers. What is the goal, and why did Argus Capital come together now?
Yeah, I think the timing was there's such change going on in the broader TMT sector, really again driven by technological advancements. So we see lots of opportunities, you know, ahead of us. And, you know, I'm fortunate enough to put together really, again, a unique group. Again, these are kind of Fortune 100 C-suite executives that happen to be all available at the same time, which is really, again, unique, certainly in the SPAC world, but even in corporate America, to have that breadth and depth of talent around me. And so what
that's
I thought,
like a wrinkle in time.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. So we studied the vehicle, the SPAC vehicle, deeply before we entered, the marketplace. And what it does, it really gives us the ability to choose the deal we want to do where we can add the most amount of value. So that's why, again, it's why a SPAC, and why, you know, now was the team was available. Again, in a space that we know something about, and lastly, all of the change that's going on that creating a lot of these opportunities.
Mm-hmm. For sure, there is so much movement right now, but among media entertainment, it really is an industry in transition. I feel like the winds around me sometimes. It is literally in transition. And I know one of the things that you've talked about is that you feel like there's going to be a lot of moving and shaking, a lot of divesting, a lot of things coming off of larger entities that may be reevaluating. Can you talk about that?
Yeah.
And why that's happening now in this market?
Yeah, I think when all of these conglomerates, you know, getting together, right, you're putting a lot of asset groups together, you know, cable nets with broadcasting, with streaming, with film companies. And I think what investors really want is they want focus. You know, when they're investing in a company, they want to know how the management team is prioritizing how they allocate capital. And now, because a lot of companies are over the top, you know, direct to consumer, whatever, you know, call it the Netflix model, if you will,
sure.
Right? It's all of that content, you know, is being distributed directly to the consumer, and that takes you know, capital to do that. So then I think investors are going to push, so then why are you in this business or that business? Again, I just always use the example of, you know, I look at Hulu, and Hulu is owned by Disney and Comcast.
Right.
Yet Disney and Comcast also have streaming services, right? Disney Plus and Peacock. So when they're making a piece of premium content, where does it go? Does it go on Peacock? Does it go on Hulu? Or does it go on Disney Plus? And I think as an investor, I think part of this process, you know, when we left after the merger, we really started, you know, thinking about, you know, what we're doing more as an investor. Mm-hmm. And really prioritizing how you do that, I think, is what's going to, these investors are going to force companies, again, to kind of choose where you want to be. And so, therefore, that leads to lots of what we're calling, you know, corporate divestitures or carve-outs, mm-hmm. where there are fantastic businesses buried inside conglomerates where their capital, you know, priority isn't top of the list. So they would be better served as a separate entity where folks are 100% dedicated to setting up the capital structure appropriate, you know, meaning how much debt does the company has? Does it pay a dividend? How does it prioritize its use? And letting investors invest in that company specifically. And again, I think it's a win-win for both. I think it's fantastic for the companies because, again, they get to unlock value, mm-hmm. right, these corporate carve-outs. And the asset class, investors get closer to it, right? And so I go back to Argus Capital. A lot of times sitting in that chair, you mm-hmm. know, we came to this with our radio division or outdoor division.
At CBS, there was a period of CBS. A lot of divestitures.
Yes, right? Yes. And so what we didn't have, though, we didn't have the right public company management in place. We had fantastic divisional management that we could help, but we had to augment that with public company management. As you know, it's very different than running a business when you're dealing with public company investors quarter to quarter. So again, I come back to is the team that we have together can actually help in that role. And that's where you're not seeing, where we saw a void in SPACs, mm-hmm. because SPACs were, you know, really, I say one man band, really a smaller shop. But because of the breadth and depth of the team we put together, we think a corporate carve out is really an interesting solution for some of these conglomerates that they can effectually kind of have us as the as an overlay to, again, a solid mm-hmm. management team, mm-hmm. right, to help tell that story and execute in the public markets.
Mm-hmm. Do you see a scenario where maybe you would buy like 80% of something from a company and they might have a small piece of it and you run it?
Yeah, I think it's actually different. I think we would only own a very small piece. So earlier you said 265. So just so you know, we raised 305. That includes the green shoe. So the underwriters get to exercise a green shoe, an overallotment. And so we've raised a little over 300. So when we look at the size of the companies we're kind of targeting, I mean, we're talking multi-billion-dollar companies. Mathematically, we're going to only own a small piece of that, and that's okay, but we're aligned with that conglomerate. So for an instance, if somebody takes a $10 billion asset and wants to separate it, right, they're going to actually own the vast majority of that asset, because if this is worth, again, $10 billion mm-hmm. and we have $300 million, mm-hmm. we're going to own a small piece of that. But the company then, what it provides for the company is, right, strategic flexibility, separate capital structure, investors at separate management, and then they can do whatever they want thereafter. They can then sell the remaining shares to the public, mm-hmm. do an exchange offer, which we've done before because of some tax basis.
So the SPAC vehicle allows a lot of that flexibility.
Exactly.
I'm learning as we're talking. Thank you, Joe.
And so yeah, look, I think part of this is, I don't think it's well understood. I think SPACs are more institutionalized today, but I still think there's a way to go to really understand the advantages of a SPAC. And, you know, what I see it is like, again, when we look at it to ourselves, here's what we ask ourselves. And we always have the target in mind is hat. And you say, should this target be a public company? That's the first question you should ask.
And that's going to be a hard question.
And it's going to be a hard question. You know, not all
and
companies.
And we've seen a lot of things that had no business being a public
right.
company.
Exactly.
Go out on
or
be trotted out.
Or they're not ready yet. Or they didn't have the right, you know, counsel and, you know, and coaching available to it. And so you got to ask yourselves. And again, back to the depth of the team, I think we'll get to the right answer when we ask ourselves that. But again, putting the target's hat on. And so if the answer to that is yes, then we have a couple more questions we want to ask. It's like, well, does timing matter? you know, if you're in a business that has growth and you have good organic growth, but there's also M&A growth, you might want to have a currency out there to start rolling these things up. So timing could be mm-hmm. important. B, you know, does projections matter to you? Meaning, do you tell your story better by future numbers or historical numbers? Again, a lot of times, as you know, in IPOs, you don't use projections, right? In a SPAC, you can use those projections if that tells a better story to reflect the current value of the enterprise, right? A lot of times when you see, you know, how did SPACs kind of come to be? When IPOs double, you know, in the first day of trading, that's very good for investors. That's not so good for the target company, because the company didn't double in value from yesterday to today.
Yeah, right. The bar just got raised a whole heck
right.
of a lot.
And so what happened there? Well, because it wasn't priced appropriately. And again, a lot of times it wasn't priced appropriately because what numbers were you looking at? And so again, a SPAC, what we call it price discovery, you get to kind of find where the market is mm-hmm. with a SPAC, because again, you tell your story, you still have to go to the investors right. and they still have to buy into the deal at that value, mm-hmm. right? And we'll talk about, you know, this thing known as a blank check, which is really a misnomer. But the investors then, you have a negotiation, the target gets to negotiate that, right, you know, different than the IPO. So if that matters, you know, to you, you use the forward projections, you hit the market quicker, and then what I think most important for Argus, right, then you get the benefit of hundreds of years of experience of the Argus team, right? Again, very different than others, mm-hmm. but again, not available in an IPO.
Do you have to make, in those conversations, I would imagine it would behoove you to make the case, here's how we're going to run it and here's how we're going to do it better or more efficiently or with more,
yeah.
you know, more strategy.
We listen to the target's company, you know, the management team or the current ownership and what their vision is. And if we could take a good idea and make it a great idea, then we're adding some value. And then we have to help them execute it along the way. So a lot of times, again, there's a lot of great companies that are, you know, probably have a great CEO and great management, which is totally fine. And we're going to help them with the public investor story. But if there's gaps, we could help and drop some executives into operating roles as necessary. But a lot of times these companies, they have a good framework. They just need a little bit of more direction of, you know, how to get there. And I think our collective experience can really help them, again, achieve, you know, their objectives really at the end of the day. But look, like I said, they have to see the value we bring to that. And again, I go back to the experience that you have when you have decades of experience with public investors. You know, what I always say with public investors, you have to tell them what you're going to do, and then you have to do what you say, mm-hmm. right? And then the value, you don't decide what the value is. They decide what the value is. But if you execute that plan, again, you know, you should be increasing value if you're hitting all of your metrics.
I know you can't talk super specifics, yeah. but the types of assets
sure.
that you're looking at, I'm guessing networks, content.
Yeah, I would say, look, it's obviously in the broader TMT space, but you know, think OTT, think direct to consumer. Any the way we like to describe it is called tech-driven media, where technology is enriching the consumer experience. Right, so we know something about, you know, how to do that. It obviously can be new sports entertainment, right? So anything that has a, you know, any live events, you know, sports, you know, I think again we have some credibility in our experience of running those types of companies. So what we're looking for is good solid businesses. Again, they could be kind of late stage VC, they could be owned by private equity portfolio companies or these kind of corporate carve outs that we call them, but good, you know, solid businesses, category leaders, strong fundamentals. They may be at a strategic inflection point, you know, they may be going from linear to digital. All of those things, again, where we can say is we have experience doing that. So I love the streaming, you know, aspect of it, because, you know, we were one of the first companies, you know, traditional media companies to launch a streaming service called CBS All Access back in 2014.
CBS All Access, I signed up, I think, the first week, and I still use it. I used it this morning.
Right, it's now called Paramount Plus, right? It's now called Paramount Plus, but if you just think about that for a second, 2014, that's 5 years before Disney Plus, Peacock, or our other peers launched their services.
It feels like a generation ago.
So when you have start at zero, and then you build it, you get a lot smarter on you know why do subs come in, why do they churn out, you know, where are they spending time. You know, I always use the example of, we used to say, Showtime has been in the subscription business for its entire existence. But up until we launched Showtime OTT, they never had a subscriber. And people look at me and they go, what do you mean by that? It was like, because the distributors had all of this subscription data on the people.
The MVPDs, the cable operators.
Comcast of the world,
they were the classic middlemen for you.
Right. And Showtime would just get cash. They'd get, a fee for that. But they didn't know their subscriber. And so once we launched Showtime Over the Top, we got so much smarter. We're able to program more efficiently. And in terms of CBS All Access, the advertising can be much more targeted, mm-hmm. right? And so the efficiency you get by doing that. And so, look, we saw the trends early. We saw that's the way consumers were consuming content. And we said we had to position the company, for that. So imagine us telling that story to a target company who has a subscription service to say, look at the breadth and depth of this team that can help you, navigate those tricky waters. You know, there are streaming wars, as going on. We believe there's not just gonna be, three or four, streaming services. We think there's lanes for many. They may not have 200 million subscribers, right? But you could still make a fantastic business model at, 10 million subscribers. Right, so we think there will be those pockets of that dedicated kind of focused streaming service. So we see there's going to be lots of those, companies kind of coming out of this. And so, look, that's what we're really kind of focusing on. We're using our collective networks to talk to the right people to make sure, again, it goes through that criteria. Is like, should this entity be public and have access to the public markets? Timing. Do we add value? Is this kind of actionable? And so, we've been excited. It's so much fun, really, to work with people you trust, respect, enjoy, being around. So it's a different kind of version for us. It's all a bit new, but again, the principle of building a world-class, organization and company, and helping another company grow, is really kind of why we get up every morning.
Don't go anywhere. We'll be back with more from Argus Capital's Joe Iannello right after this message. And we're back with more from Argus Capital's Joe Iannello.
Are you to the point where you are calling people, people that business associates and like, hey, what about this? Could we do something? Is the market that kind of like just active right now?
We're in the targeting phase, and so what we do is we target companies where, again, we're putting the conglomerate or the target's company hat on, and we're thinking to ourselves, should this company be public, or should this asset, group of assets be public? Should it be separated in some sort of way? What are the pros and cons? And again, because we sat in the chair, I would say, I would never do that because X, Y, and Z, or that makes perfect sense. So you're looking for stuff that unlocks value, right, for the target, right, and gives them capital, third-party capital. We're going to bring money into this
off-balance sheet, equity.
It'll be equity. It could be debt, right? We will bring third-party capital north of the $300 million we have. So the way the process works.
So you'll be responsible for bringing capital even beyond
the $300 million. Yes.
Right. And so with scale, you're talking about a pipe.
Exactly. So that's called a pipe. Basically, it's a private investment in the public entity. And so we will, once we know what it is. It's hard to go raise money when I don't know what the deal is. But once we know what the deal is, we would then go and raise more capital. That's why I think we can do a very large deal, infuse significant capital, let that business grow while the parent, the target, whatever, still controls, mm-hmm. right, the entity. And it gets, again, the added value benefit of our collective operating experience.
So it would be like they would... a scenario would be that the larger company would keep 51%.
Sure.
And then be able to consolidate, but it would not have.
That's right. And so again, it gives them strategic flexibility. That's why, again, if I was sitting in the chair, if I was running one of these large media conglomerates today, right, I would be thinking about that. Because that's very interesting, again, because, again, I know you cannot just say, hey, you know, I know the NFL just re-upped their rights, right? So you saw everybody's rights fees, you know, increase significantly. So,
Everybody's shaking the couch, where does that capital come from?
Mm-hmm. Well, that capital's got to come from, you know, that balance sheet of that media company. Well, then where else? Well, I mean, what's giving? You know, can you increase revenue at that rate? That is, I don't think so. Right. And so that's why you have to make those choices. And that's why you see companies selling assets. You see them, you know, divest them. And this is such an elegant, a tax-free way to do something, to bring in, you know, third-party capital, smart money, mm-hmm. with an experienced operator-led group. Again, for me, it's win-win-win for everybody. Now, the key is that you have to price it right. Right, you know, if you push the valuation, that doesn't work so well. And what I just keep saying is, look, let us build it. You know, the initial merger is just a starting point of where the value is. We build it from there. Mm-hmm. And so we as a management group agree to lock up our shares. Mm-hmm. We won't sell shares for multi-years.
And you commit to be operators? Or is the idea that
It depends. I think, again, it's whatever the target needs is really the gap we're going to fill. Mm-hmm. If they need one or all as operators, if they need, maybe it's sitting on the board, or maybe it's just as an investor. Mm-hmm. And so to me, it's like, again, we're here to help, again, the company along, again, manage the public markets, and in certain instances, manage the company if necessary.
But you wouldn't have as much of a timeline for returns as a more traditional
equity
type.
No. Again, we're a long time. We're used to receiving, you know, employee stock options, right? They were very long. They're 4-year based, right, and stuff like that, with restrictions and stuff like that. And so, again, we're doing this for the long haul. I mean, our objective here is to build a platform to allow the company to succeed with our knowledge base, and we're going to kind of put our money where our mouth is and not just say, hey, we build this thing, we sell it, and we go off to the next one. We want to make sure, again, this is successful, so we're going to have to put in time.
Mm-hmm. I know... I won't press you on specifics, but do you have any, are you in the hunt on anything now? Do you have any sense of like a time when you might have a deal?
Yeah, and I don't. I think we're having lots of good, interesting conversations. I obviously won't comment on anything specific at the moment, but I think there are some real, I would say, big, you know, opportunities that some of these companies have to decide. They're making the decision. We're just kind of pointing out what we think the upside is to kind of, for them to see it through our eyes. And if we're kind of like-minded and we see the world similarly, then I would say there's something there. So, I'm quite encouraged by the conversations we're having. We want to make sure we're disciplined not to kind of just jump at the first, right, you know, idea. We want to put it through a thorough, you know, due diligence process to make sure we fully vet, you know, all the risk, because again, we're investors. Right at the end of the day,
you have skin in the game.
We have skin in the game, right? And so we're aligned, you know, with the investors, and so we want to see it be successful, and that takes time. But again, I go back to the team. Is, you know, the key is going to be due diligence, because when we would buy, you know, a company at CBS, we would make sure we understood the business very well before we decided, you know, what price we would pay. And it's a very similar type of analysis that we're doing. So you know, if we're going through employee costs and stuff like that, you know, we know that. And so I think that part of it is going to be very helpful. And we're going to look for, you know, where there's value upside, right? Where somebody may not, if you're not in the business, if you don't understand, it's like, hey, you're looking at a contract. It's like, hey, we can do this with this content that it's not being monetized. Unless you've been there and kind of done that, mm-hmm. you won't see it that way. And if we see it, again, point it out, and we kind of, you know, get it properly valued, I think that would demonstrate to the target and to investors that say, wow, those guys are really adding value, because I didn't realize that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Oh, that depth of experience.
Yeah.
Let me ask you, yeah, my last question for you.
Yeah.
Argus, where did the name come from?
Very interesting. So we were very democratic about the Argus name because we had to name it, and every obvious name that you would think of is taken, and you know, and so we would do legal searches. So we, the entire team, I wanted it, you know, blind. So everybody submitted a list of names, and then everybody kind of voted, you know, on it. And Argus got the most votes. And Argus in Greek mythology, it means it's the eyes of Argus. And what we thought, because we're quote unquote on the hunt for a deal, having the eyes of Argus out there scouring, you know, looking for a deal, you know, it made the most sense. And so, so yeah. And so I didn't know who named it. So one of our team members was the one who came up with it. But I didn't know when we did it at the time, who did it, to make it, you know, as democratic as you can possibly make it, to just say, it's like, if I came up with the name, everyone's, yeah, I like that name. I like that name. So, I did not come up with the name.
That's a good collective approach there. Well, and you could forgive a bunch of CBS veterans wanting a name that indicated eyes.
Yeah, that was not lost upon us as well when it said the eyes. And I said, maybe the logo should, and we said, no, too far. And,
you know, something about IP. You know people.
Yes. And then we had a little design company design the logo, which was fantastic. And So look, we're really jazzed about this next chapter. I think, as I said before, it's fun. We're really enjoying this process. It's different.
Is it exciting to be truly building something? Yeah. You've been in corporations for so long.
And because look, I think we're learning about businesses that I would say are media adjacent, where, you know, some are coming to us to say, hey, this is not exactly down your fairway, but it's close. And so would you consider doing something like this on that? And so, so it's just having those conversations to understand those business models is really kind of interesting. And just to saying, wow, there's a lot of interesting businesses out there outside of the media, you know, world. And so I think, again, it's really just been it's been invigorating to really kind of, you know, see this kind of from nothing all of a sudden start kind of forming, literally going through an IPO process, doing a roadshow. I'm like, wait a minute. But really, right now, right, we're just capital. We have capital, and the operations are pretty limited. And so we're saying, wait a minute, we're not used to doing that. We're used to kind of, you know, dealing with issues and tens of thousands of employees, and you know, it's just a dozen of us on a Zoom call, you know, at the moment. But we're using investment banks. We're using all of our collective networks, really, again, to find the right opportunity that, again, and make a deal that works for everybody.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting because, you know, I've been through, like, we've been through periods where everybody's talking to everybody, merger, but in this moment, it feels like things are being almost like Legos, you know? Yeah. Things are being snapped off and snapped together in different ways, and so I can imagine with your expertise in that and money and drive, which definitely we can sense.
Yeah, and I think that's why we did this, because, you know, several of us could have went with the private equity route, did a traditional route where another media company and things of that nature. But this, you know, kind of felt, because of all of this change going on, the opportunities, that we were going to be able to kind of pick the one we saw, you know, as the upside, but again, also having a little bit of fun and understanding where we can add some value. And so, look, it lined up. I always say, you know, timing in life is everything. And I would not be able to put this group together, you know, 12 months from now, and do that. And so that's why, again, we said we saw the opportunity. And I think, you know, the way we position it is kind of, we call it, for lack of a better unique term, SPAC 2.0, where this is what a SPAC should be. It should be an operator-led team that can add value to the target post the deal.
Thanks for listening. Be sure to leave us a review at Apple Podcasts. We love to hear from listeners. And be sure to tune in next week for another episode of Strictly Business.